Ads now.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I am Tawanda Henry Beattie. And yes, welcome to the best political podcast on the continent and indeed across continents. At least best political podcast on Zimbabwe.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the truth. We've been holding it down for a while now. And yeah, we're in studio. We have a guest today. Henry is
surrounded by Chris's today.
Yeah, let's gang up on this guy who's out there in the diaspora. Welcome, Chris Chenga. Welcome back. I should say you've been here before.
Thank you for having me again, guys. It's always a pleasure to be here on Politics and Beyond.
Yeah. And for those who haven't listened to the first episode we had Chris on, go back and listen to that. It was one of my favorite episodes, and there's some predictions and permutations in there. That
that was the Bond Notes episode. It really was a good episode. It was just before Bond Notes had been introduced into the economy, and we debated them quite a bit. And now you can't even get bond notes anywhere. Saga Chris.
At least they didn't collapse the economy as many people had, or as many analysts experts had foreseen.
What did you foresee?
No, I was of the contrary view. It seemed most superficial critics of bond notes thought they were going to be like the end of the economy and whatnot. But hey, we're a few months in. They've served to a certain extent their purpose, arguably to a point where the question is not whether they're actually good medicine. The question is, have they been dosed off enough to be potent? Which is two different things to what most critics were saying.
I think someone would, I would argue that, you know, the definition of a collapsed economy in our context is, it needs further refining. But you know, I'll give it to you. I was very doom and gloom, and I did say that they will flood the markets with the bond notes, and they have not flooded the markets with the bond note, thankfully. So yeah, we'll just see how, you know, maybe a full bond note review with you another day would be necessary. But that's not what we're doing today.
Like right now, I could use some bond notes. That's all I'm
actually
saying.
Just the other day, I do know the RBZ governor had a presser with media editors and whatnot, and part of the conversation, the revelations are actually like in stores in Lusaka. You know, there are Zimbabweans in Lusaka, and they're actually using bond notes. In Mozambique, they're actually using bond notes. So I mean, hey, we don't know. We'll see. But it's an interesting phase in our economy.
Yes, yes, indeed. Today is the 14th of June, 2017. Up on the lineup, we're going to talk about some of the things that have been happening in Zimbabwe that are affected by politics and some political issues. There was the bus disaster that happened last week.
Mm-hmm.
ZANU-PF is holding another youth interface rally, so we'll look at why it is only when those things happen that, you know, towns and cities get it spruced up. We'll talk about Shingi Munyeza, who put out a what's the name of the thing that he put out?
I'd call it
Advice and Warning from the Watchmen.
Advice and Warning from the Watchmen. Yeah, so we'll go into that a little bit, and then we'll talk about business people as politicians. So you've got your likes of Iwe Shingi Munyeza. Who else has been touted? Nkosana Moyo, he's been touted. He worked at
Strive Masiwa.
Strive Masiwa, his name's been out there. But and you've got the rise of businessmen actually taking political office. Donald Trump and Macron in France. So there is precedent for it. So yeah, we'll go into that. We have a guy who likes to talk business with us, Chris Chenga. Saka, we'll open up the floor to hear what he says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess you can tell me about this King Lion disaster. And, you know, I heard it's an unfortunate incident. I haven't really kept abreast of it.
Yeah, it was actually proclaimed a national disaster. A King Lion bus, which was traveling from Harare to Lusaka, had an accident along the Harare Chirundu Highway, so around Nyamakati, I think the area was, and 45 people, I believe, died in that bus crash. And reports are that the driver was speeding. Not sure how fast he was going, but it says he was speeding, and then
supposedly 140 k's per hour.
So, yeah, which is for a bus, that's what, 60 k's over their limit of 80.
Their speed limit, yeah. Yeah.
So, and then he lost, you know, control of the vehicle, I believe, and he went into a tree. And if anyone has ever traveled on that road, I traveled with a King Lion bus 2 years ago to Lusaka. And one thing as well, they were traveling at night. And that road, one, is thin. Two, it's got quite a lot of potholes. And three, it's curvy and hilly. So it's a bunch of up and downs. You're doing curves and the road is quite bad. So speeding 140 on that road in any vehicle is really just setting yourself up for disaster. That's the first.
That's the Kariba. That's the Kariba road.
Yeah, that's the one that goes to Kariba.
That road is terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. So that road, I don't know why, you know, he was speeding. Maybe he was trying to get to the border. I think the border closed at 10. But regardless, that is not an excuse, because you have people's lives in your vehicle, and you must be a responsible individual and take care of people's lives. And I understand that, you know, some of the passengers complained about how fast he was going and asked him to slow down in Banket, in Chinoy, in Karoy, and still he didn't adhere to their requests.
Yeah, no, that's very, very, very unfortunate. And I think that, you know, I think, but these aren't the first, like, similar type of road accidents and bus disasters that I've heard of. Certainly not the first time that people have had car crashes in public transport along that road. And until there's serious, either something legislated or some public policy harm for the actual companies, then the owners of these companies are going to keep putting these pressures on their bus drivers, and the bus drivers are going to keep running to these crazy deadlines. Because I think that if it's not helping the owner, if it's not hurting, sorry, the pockets of the owners, then they have no incentive to really change how their buses are run.
Yeah, I agree. There definitely needs to be policies put in place. Also, this is something that goes without saying. The roads do need to be fixed. That will aid and assist just travel of individuals. And also, you know, some people have called for a ban on night driving for these buses and trucks and that sort of thing, because this isn't, as you said, the first bus disaster, and a lot of them tend to happen at night. So I don't know. We do hope that something happens and that there is a change and that the owners take responsibility, because, again, as I said, you are transporting people. This is not Sagadichibagi or something. You have people's lives in your hands, so you must be very conscious and responsible of that fact.
Yeah.
My condolences to the people, and I do wish a speedy recovery to anyone who was injured in that accident.
Yeah, and I understand. Just kudos to the government, because I was just reading up about it here quickly, that when a declaration of a state disaster is made, you know, it entitles the deceased in that disaster to some burial costs, $200, I think. It's, you know, it's the money that's obviously goes towards their burials, and it's always necessary. So I think at least there's a little bit of something that's happening, and I'm sure that the business world and others have gathered around to try and help the families of these people involved in the disaster. And there's even been lawyers who've reached out to, you know, to offer legal recourse and legal remedies. But I think we'll just see how it plays out, because I think it's really something that needs to be tackled, not on this individual basis, but on a larger, like, you know, a much larger societal level.
Yes, indeed. moving on, other things happening in the news. There's something I wanted to talk about that I just thought of now, and that's Professor Moyo dropping his emails on the Twitter timeline. He did it to... He dropped the conversation he had with Fadzai Mahere and the other... I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, he dropped a conversation that he had with a journalist. I think his name is Richard Chidza from Newsday as well. So just a quick tip, if you're going to be emailing Chris, if you're going to be emailing Prof Moyo...
Use it against you.
Yeah, be prepared because he might just expose it onto his Twitter timeline.
But I don't know why people... I don't know, maybe. I feel like in this day and age, you must communicate already, assuming people are going to... Maybe it's about me and Gujera, you know, Askana, because me, I already assume that if you say anything in a message, someone is going to take a screenshot. Someone's going to take a screenshot. So you're not sending a message to that one person, nigga. So you always need to protect yourself anyway.
Yeah, but you wouldn't expect... Honestly, you wouldn't expect it from, number one, a grown man. Let's just
He's the pettiest man in the country, my God.
You see, so you have, number one, a grown man, and two, a government minister. I mean, you'd expect that certain conversations are, you know, private. I don't know how you feel, Chris.
When anybody is representing an office, it's very hard for you to distinguish personal from office, in the sense that assume what was in those emails, or assume those emails were released by the counterparty. What if the professor was speaking out of line? What he was saying, unruly things. Would you judge whatever text it was based on saying, oh, those are just the professor's comments on his own, or would you judge his office? So my emphasis here is, when you're engaging anyone who holds a public office, the best assumption is there is no personal conversation. Hence, even in your medium of exchange, whether it's through text message, you've just got to assume that it's of public interest. Hence, so for me, looking from that counterpart, I'm not too judgmental or critical of him leaking those, because that's his office. That is the nature of the environment in which he operates in. So I'm not too... I would just advise people who approach people in public office to do it with caution, knowing that they're responding, or they will act in terms of paranoia of their office. So I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if he leaked my conversations with him, because I know he's in that box.
Fair enough. I didn't expect him to do it. It came as a bit of a surprise. I mean, surely there's other ways to handle these things, but you know what? It is his prerogative to, you know, handle his business the way he chooses.
Yeah, and I mean, I think why it was so interesting for those that aren't on the group, and for those that here speaking of the politics and beyond WhatsApp group, you can go and join it. The links should be on our Twitter's personal Twitter feeds. But we had this conversation in the actual group, and a number of people were saying before the emails were leaked that Fadzi is going to lose, Fadzi Advocate Mahere is going to lose some credibility by interviewing Professor Moyo. And I was against it. I genuinely thought that, you know, she had nothing to lose in as far as that credibility, because, you know, I assumed that, you know, the way she would conduct herself would make her beyond reproach. But by leaking the documents, you know, there's particularly one line where you know, she offers him questions before the interview. And, you know, it really did... make her lose some of that, or at least not so personally in her personal capacity, but her show lose that hard line, hard talk type of
why do people have that assumption, though, Henry? Why?
Because it said on the poster, on the poster it did say tough conversations. So based on that,
that's literally those are exact words.
So based on that
tough conversation, if it's live broadcast, you can't be offering someone questions ahead of time.
From my stance,
mm-hmm. Yeah, carry on.
Is you can have, I don't agree with the popular assumption that a tough conversation is based on the element of surprise or someone not being not knowing the questions you're going to ask them. At the end of the day, you're engaging somebody who's either incumbent in a certain office or he holds title in a certain context, right? So for you to create that platform of engagement, you've got to both be conscious of what are you going to be talking about, right? So it is not odd or we just spoke about prof. Assume hard talk. The assumption is hard talk, you don't have, it's no holds bars. And the assumption is that there were no preconceived questions. That's nonsense. The man doesn't fly from the UK to come and sit with Professor Moyo and then start firing away. You've got to have context. What are you coming to talk about? Which topics are you going to engage? So it doesn't mean that since Fazai sent or offered to send questions in advance, she's going to draw back on impartiality.
That's not where my point was. Mm-hmm. In as far as the live part of the interview, is that a lot of the marketing was around the fact that it was live and we would get to interact with the professor in that setting, in the way Facebook Live videos have been had before. Mm-hmm. So obviously, if there's going to be a predetermined question list and everything like that, then people's questions aren't going to be taken. Gotcha. That's my assumption.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think it was just on the prof's part. I think it was, you know, it surprised a lot of people, and I think it gave insight into the kind of person he is and the kind of interactions that you're having. I do agree with you, Chris, that, you know, you certainly can send, you know, questions and topics that you're going to discuss, and then how you then frame the interview will determine how it, you know, comes out when it's being broadcast. Moving on to our other topic, which is ZANU-PF. I think we'll run through this one quickly because we've spoken about their youth interfaces. There's another one happening this Friday, I think. Yes, Friday the 16th in Mutare. And they've been cleaning up the city, pretty much. I think the same thing they did with Marondera. New roads, some vendors have been displaced. Of course, it's because HE is coming to town. But it begs the question. First question is, where's the money coming from? And second question is, why haven't these things been happening, you know, since whenever it was? Like, why are city councils rushing now on deadline day when you could have done this before? Because if you can find the money now, today, it means you probably could have found the money before.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden, guy, you've got money coming from the ministry.
Ah, fair enough.
You've got money coming from the ministry and directions coming directly from the ministry. So it's not necessarily that they've got the money, it's that they've all of a sudden have funds available to them.
So the problem is local government.
It's a bit unrelated, but it's interesting, you know, to talk of how the city council and the ministry interfaces. If anyone has a chance to go on the mayor of Harare's Facebook page, and also Rusty Markham, who's a Harare city councillor's Facebook page. And they're quite public about what some of the constraints that they have. And one of the things that they speak about is that, you know, these mayoral positions aren't executive, first of all, and how, you know, funds aren't available to them because town clerks and others are appointees and are often political appointees that has to be agreed to by the minister. So if you're a councillor working and the executive or the business side of the city council doesn't avail funds to you as a councillor, you can't do anything. For example, Rusty's been trying to get a part fixed in a dump truck for weeks, but they've refused to sign off on the $2,000 needed for it, so he can't do anything about it. So I think that once the minister says you can release money, people are more willing to do so.
Yeah, fair enough. That's another bureaucracy issue and a problem of local government or the central government trying to control the municipalities and towns, which, you know, is problems on its own. And the situation you find is that a lot of these cities and towns, the major ones, are in the municipalities. The opposition controls a lot of these municipalities, and so there's this fight between the central government, which is ZANU-PF, and the MDC, which is usually in control of some of these municipalities. So, yeah, we'll see what happens at the youth interface on Friday. I'm sure it will pretty much be the same as the one that happened in Marondera. There was a Politburo meeting today. I doubt anything spectacular is going to come out of that. We're in campaign season. So it's, you know.
Can I just say something about that youth interface?
Yeah.
There's lots of dance or artists going. And to the youth in Mutare, you must go to that youth interface and enjoy the music. And if there's food, go and eat that food as well. Like, go freely, go and enjoy yourself, have a good time. Because, you know, going to a rally or interface doesn't mean that's who you're going to vote for. So if there's anyone who feels that they shouldn't be allowed to enjoy dance or music because all of a sudden that this person has performed this Mugabe rally, don't be ridiculous, because that's not where you vote for.
Two things, interestingly, now that you brought that up. The first is that, so apparently the MDC has been putting out flyers to say that people shouldn't attend these youth, stop people from attending the youth interfaces in Mutare. And the second thing is that, speaking about the dancehall artists, I think Soldier Love is one of them. But you find last year Tuku got quite some flack for performing at the Million Man March. People were on about we should boycott Tuku because he's performing for ZANU-PF and all sorts of things. And I saw a little bit of the conversation being brought up again this time around with Anna Soldier Love. So I don't know what your guys' opinions are on these things. Personally, I think, I'm an entertainer. I'm getting paid. Saka, you know, at the end of the day, I'm going to do my job. But yeah, I mean,
On a quick point of correction, on the MDC's flyers, they're saying people have a right. That from what I've seen, and I'll try and make this public, from what I've seen, the flyers say you shouldn't be forced to go to rally. You don't have to be forced. It's not saying don't go. It's saying you don't have to be forced.
All right, fair
enough. So if you're going to work, you can go to work. I think that's a slight difference there.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I stand corrected.
And I think if you're an artist and you have a schedule to fill and you're asked to come and exercise your profession, I do think you should go to perform. Whether there's a politician there or not, that is secondary. Go and perform.
But isn't it endorsing the politics of the day?
No, it's not.
Or the political party or the politician?
It's endorsing your set. If he wasn't paying, then perhaps you can put an argument where are you not endorsing the politician or not. But if you're getting paid for exercising your services, I don't see how that is perceived as... If it was an MDC youth interface and whoever and such went to perform, would the assumption be that they're endorsing MDC?
Yeah, of course. You know how this country. You know how this country is.
If he does a slogan, he's endorsed.
If he does a slogan.
Yeah, if you do a slogan on stage, but I don't know. I got
the person in Mandu.
No, that's very rhythmic.
What if it's in the song? Anyway, on to Dr. Shiki Munyeza. We've actually covered quite a lot of topics. But on to Dr. Shiki Munyeza, he's got this Watchmen thing. The 2018 harmonized elections, advice and warning from the Watchmen. So there's three parts: advice to the Zimbabwean voter, to the opposition parties, and to the ruling party. I will speed read some of these and we'll post it on our Politics and Beyond Facebook page, just for those who want to go through it. Advice and warning to the Zimbabwean voter. Ours is a constitutional democracy, and the only way to change governments is through the ballot box. Those eligible to vote must register when registration opens. The urban citizen is the number two. The urban citizen is the most vocal when things go wrong, yet voter turnout is below 30% compared to rural vote turnout of over 70%. Ensure you vote when the day comes. Number three, during this time, you will be given all sorts of enticements to vote for certain political parties. Please get whatever is on offer, but separate the gift from your vote. Four, always know your vote is your secret, no matter what tricks are used on you. Blend in if your safety and security is threatened. Five, ultimately it's individual candidates that form a government. Vote for the individual and not the party. Advice and warning to opposition parties. There's never going to be a level playing field. The ruling party will never reform itself out of power, so plan to participate in an uneven electoral system. Two, in life, it's easy to become the very thing you're fighting against without noticing. You don't have the intellectual property to the struggle you are fighting. Three, whilst rolling out of BVR, the ruling party will roll out its own membership electronic registration. Learn from the old fox. Four, less than 10% of voters are on social media. Concentrate on grassroots structures. Social media is both entertaining and misleading. Beware of fake news. Five, candidature is key. Therefore, you must ensure it's bottom-up in representation whilst demonstrating leadership. No one lives forever, and you don't have to be the only one to accomplish everything for everyone. And then to the ruling party. It's evident that you're entering another election with all the ingredients of Boram Sango. The nightmare of March 2008 can be relived. Two, your worst enemy is not your political opponents, but the economy. There are no signs that this is going to be fixed soon. You will lose against the economy. Don't intimidate or command it. Three, indeed, without your proposed presidential candidate, the party will disintegrate into at least three formations. It's too late for succession fights. Four, people are not stupid. Therefore, avoid making nauseating and abusive statements to the voters. These statements will backfire in due course. And five, actually, the common person would not be worried about who is in power only if you fielded credible, righteous, and hardworking candidates. Your undoing is the nature of your candidates. So there it is. That's advice and warning from the Watchman. What do you guys think? We'll start with for the voters.
Chris can go ahead. My only comment
is Watchman is superficial.
How so?
I have to be wary in my response because at the end of the day, I'd have to ask you: is he being an analyst? Is he being a political consultant? Where is he standing? Depending on whatever he determines to be, or he's just sharing his opinion. If he's just sharing his opinion, he's allowed to be superficial. But if he's trying to be a political consultant, as his tone suggests, or to be an analyst, like he's also suggesting, he's pretty superficial. Take the idea of, what's that comment again, Chris, if you don't mind reading again?
Which one?
On you can't something the economy or command it.
Your worst enemy is not your political opponents, but the economy. There are no signs that this is going to be fixed. You will lose against the economy. Don't intimidate or command it.
Let's assume there are no signs that the economy is going to be fixed. What is he talking about? Because all metrics, let's take statistics, for example. The World Bank actually expects growth this year. So what is he talking about? What is he placing it on? You've had profitable companies on the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange. So what is he pointing at? He's just pointing superficially to public mood and sentiment. When he talks about you can't command an economy, he's taking shots at the command agriculture, right?
Yeah.
On what facts and analysis is he talking about? Command agriculture, just last week, Seedco is giving out a $10 million dividend. Now, for a stakeholder who's benefiting from command agriculture, yeah, government can control things, can command things to that extent, and it actually works. So the Watchman is pretty superficial.
Henry?
I agree with the initial analysis that it's superficial, but not for the same reasons given above quite clearly. I think that it's superficial in as far as that most of the advice given is pretty apparent to everyone. These are things that people have been saying. So
apparent makes it superficial, Henry. This is exactly
that's
my point.
That's what I said, guy. I said I agree with you, guy. That's okay. What I'm saying. I agree with it.
He disagrees on the economy point.
I'm not necessarily even about the economy point. I'm just saying for even a wider range of
reasons,
of issues than
than
just the economy point. And what really I do take sort of umbrage with is that there are these pseudo political actors who don't have the guts to get involved in opposition or ruling party politics and think that because of the few cents and dollars that they've made in their careers.
Henry,
the
you're such a legend.
Given an honorary degree somewhere
such,
in the world,
you're
that
such
they
a
can
legend.
All of a sudden decide to have an opinion on what's going on in this country without really putting their fingers into the pot.
And to carry what Henry's saying, here's the thing. It's about time the watchman makes it clear on what stool is he hanging his hat on. Is he trying to, like I said, he's allowed like any other citizen to air his opinion, right? But is he trying to enter the political arena? Is he trying to be a political slash economic consultant? Is he trying to be an analyst, right? He's got to make his intentions clear. Where, on what foot is he standing on? Because at the end of the day, it seems, perhaps superficially from myself and Henry maybe, that this man is knocking on the political door. Now, if he is, he should make his intentions clear so that we can slash him the way we slash all other politicians. but clearly he's been slashed right now. And I suppose, and to be fair, I completely agree that this is not new. I mean, it's what everyone has pretty much been saying for quite some time. Register to vote, take all the free stuff, and, you know, your vote is your secret. Opposition parties, this is where your failings are. It's you know, the government isn't going to reform itself out of government. So my issue with it, with this information and is like I have with all sort of activists.
Is he an activist?
I'll put activists in quote, mm-hmm. and I'll put a whole bunch of people in there. Is at the end of the day, yeah, fair and fine. You've said all this, but to what end? Like, we're getting towards the business end of, you know, the political season. What are you actually hoping to achieve? You know, where are you trying to lead people? When you tell people these things, what is it that you're hoping people to do? And you know, everyone then comes back and says, but everyone must participate and everyone must think. Yes, fair and fine, but people also, there's a large mass of people, and this is voters, however million of them they are, that really are looking for options and looking for someone to vote for. So at the end of the day, the conversations must be steered towards political outcomes. And this, I don't think, has political outcomes. It's just, you know, loose advice being given to anyone who's willing to listen.
Sorry, to add to what Chris is saying. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Henry.
Yeah. No, after you. Sir.
To add to what Chris is saying, I would look at it more as Zimbabwe needs to come to a point where we hold each other accountable. Iron sharpens iron, right? This is why I'm saying he needs to define to what extent a stakeholder he's sending out his message. Is he saying it as an analyst? Is he saying it as a consultant? Is he saying it as a political hopeful? Because you can't be in the middle, okay? If you're going to make yourself so overt, at least stand by your stool and make people know what exactly you're standing for. Now, the assumption here is, now also there's also this idea that he's supposedly a successful businessman, right? Hence, we should take credence.
Supposedly.
Supposedly, because depending on what your analysis is, in some instances he is, in some instances he's been, but that's a conversation for another day.
Mm. Yeah,
go ahead, Henry.
I mean, personally, like, not to offend people that are religious, even Kazita Kachu, the Watchman, it has this moralistic, you know, connotation of.
Is he standing on a religious hat?
Of judgment over people as if he's somehow above, and I mean, look, let's not take away the advice. It's quite apparent advice. It's people, things people are saying in many different ways, but at least when it comes from Magaisa, you know good, he's a political analyst. When it comes from the Herald, you know that they've mm-hmm. got their agenda. When it comes from me or from Chris or from yourself, you know where people are coming from. But this overarching watchman, it's
suffering an existential crisis.
But I mean, he's a pastor and a businessman. So let's take it from the perspective of him being a pastor.
Then that's not good enough enlightenment.
Church, or he goes to his boardroom. If you go to his church, you go to his boardroom.
Either, because that's not good business speak. And it's not good religious speak. That's what I'm saying, you know?
No, but he also has freedoms to express his thoughts and
there's
opinions
also this issue that
wants.
In Zimbabwe, we feel like because there's this social esteem we have of successful business people, We think they make good political either voices or potential candidates, which...
Yeah, let's go into that, because that is the next aspect of it. You have Shingi Mnyeza, who's...
Wait, before you go, what is he a doctor of, actually, first of all?
Because... If I'll look it up, let me actually do that.
It's an honorary.
Is it honorary?
Yes, I can remember from which institute.
From that one in Malaysia.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I'm really not sure. Business career.
From Solusi University.
Yeah, I think that's where it was.
Solusi is a local university.
So the Seventh-day Adventist Uni, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with an honorary degree, right? I would welcome it. But then my issue is...
I think you have to pay like, what, $3,000?
No, but then what I'm saying is, let's not take away from the idea of honorary degrees, because at the end of the day, you've got to have some sort of societal, educational, something impact. And obviously to them, he had whatever
Chris,
impact. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Getting an honorary degree like Beatrice Metetwa got from Rhodes University or Wits University is very different from... It's the same thing with not just your actual qualified degrees. If you're getting a qualified degree from Lotito University, it's very different from getting one from Rhodes or UCT or from Harvard. Like, it's the same way we judge everything. So I would laugh at an honorary degree from a small university the same way an employer would look down at a bachelor's from the same university.
I see what you mean. Okay.
But yeah, we're talking about business people and entering the fray of politics and with I don't know, you had your opinions on that, Chris.
Judging from the Watchman, business people should stay away from politics. Why do I say that? There's no right or wrong, to be honest. However, what I would say is the popular assumption that successful businessmen or supposedly successful businessmen make for good political candidates, I think is a bit superficial, a bit idealized. Why? The objectives of a business and the objectives of government are two totally different things. Business, to a large extent, it's agreed, has one objective function, which is to make profit and attend to stakeholders, right? Governments do not have a single objective. Governments have a plethora of objectives, which to a large extent are removed from your typical executive or your entrepreneur, right? I'll give you an example. You've got public goods, such as your post office. Assume somebody in Lotito. It is not the most profitable, or for a business case, it doesn't make sense for you to have vans that go and deliver mail to Lotito every day, right? So in terms of an economic case, a business case, Lotito is basically marginalized from your public mail, right? If you ran it like a business, it does not make business sense to go and deliver mail to Lotito every day. There is not enough volumes for it to be profitable. Now, from a representative point of view, of which government is representative in a republic, would you want a politician who runs that shrewdly in your to dictate government policy? Do you get what I'm trying to say? So there's an existential disparity between what a successful businessman is aligned to typically and to what government's aligned to. Now, obviously, there are other aspects such as understanding efficiency, understanding being driven to have results, which apply to a governmental context. But what I'm just trying to say is it does not mean that a successful businessman will be a successful in a governance capacity.
He was quite comprehensive, because he preempted my point about that business people generally tend to have a drive to efficiency or drive to urgency that people you find politicians and civil servants often don't have. I don't think that businessmen have any more skills that make them better qualified for public office than lawyers or doctors. I think that at the end of the day, it's really about individual candidates. So I wouldn't disqualify business people based on the fact that they're business people is mm-hmm. where I sort of get. I don't think that they're any less qualified than a lawyer but there's lots of good qualities that make lawyers suitable for public office, but there are also lots of, issues that make lawyers unsuitable for public office. So I wouldn't. And teachers are the worst for public office.
I don't know. Did we have this discussion on the show before about
yeah,
the different
when Alex was over on the show?
Yeah. So it, for me, I've said teachers.
I don't know. I think you see. But then here's the thing. You've got to have, for me, I think, in my politicians, I'm just looking for somebody who's socially conscious and can deliver on that conscience, right? I'm looking for someone who's socially conscious and can deliver on that conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that, does that mean teachers are not socially conscious? No. Does that mean business people are not socially conscious? But I just think that there's an overemphasis in Zim society to assume that because he's wildly successful in business, it means he would be good
at running a country. The thing is, I think from the perspective a lot of people are looking at it from is that we have an economy that is struggling,
mm-hmm.
right? And because of that, people are looking for somebody who could, if you take
run
for
it
example,
like a business.
Say, for example, Strive Masiwa, right?
Mm.
He has a very successful business, right? So if you can apply that to running the economy aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
and because our economy is run from a political perspective where mm-hmm. the politics dictates how the economy functions,
mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is that people are, you know, addressing, and where the desire or potential desire or interest in a businessman actually stems
from. I'll give
from.
You another example.
Yeah.
RBZ.
So Chris, before you answer, can we do this conversation justice and maybe focus in on all your Strives and your Nkosanas, because this, I think we're dancing around the
let's zone in on the suppose the people who are assumed to be good politicians.
Nkosana Moyo
listen, for me, Nkosana Moyo makes sense.
In those positions.
For me, Nkosana Moyo makes sense from the aspect where he's a successful businessman who's been in a governance office, right? So he understands the intricacies that come with. I'll give you an example, right? The RBZ it's got too many employees in its books, right?
Yeah.
More than tens of thousands, right? From a business point of view,
tens of thousands.
More than tens of thousands of employees within RBZ books, right? Who are in a business case, what a business person would do is retrench them. That is the immediate solution, right?
Yeah.
And to people who assume you should run an economy like a business, would they stand on the decision to fire 90,000 people on the spot?
As a business person, yes, of course.
From a business perspective, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
But from a societal aspect, does it? Because in the short term, it means you're making people vulnerable, especially in an economy like this, which doesn't have enough central governance money. You're making them vulnerable to social ills, right?
Yeah, fair enough.
But so what I'm trying to show is there's certain decisions that go beyond just a business sense, right? So to zone in on the people who are supposedly putting their heads into the politics, right? It doesn't...
Chris, a politician wouldn't make that choice because it's political suicide to retrench 90,000 people, not because of the social aspect of it. That's my opinion. I don't think that they would do it because of...
I would say it's also political... It's
any more than a businessman cares. The politician only cares because it affects his bottom line, which is his votes.
I believe in socially conscious politicians.
I'm just saying, I believe in these people.
Mm-hmm. I get what you say. Okay. So I don't know, in terms of the guys who are supposedly interested in running or who are being touted or just, you know, who people perceive as they should run, I don't know. Obviously, listen, from a governance point of view, it's very hard to argue against someone like Nkosana Moyo because he's been in both offices. He's been a businessman, he's been in governance, and he's done relatively well in both hats. So you assume he has the qualities of, or he has the consciousness to be successful, right? In terms of Watchmen, I don't know, because for me, to be honest, I'm not a fan of the Watchmen.
For me, Watchmen is a pastor, so those are number two on my list of people I wouldn't want in political office. But anyway, carry on.
So yeah, I don't know. In terms of the idea that Strive Masiwa would make a good politician, I don't know, because I've never seen him or, you know, been, we don't have enough tangible things we can judge him on from a governance point of view, right? From a business point of view, yes, he's successful, but I don't know, who knows? He hasn't been in that hat. Now, if you want to be extra analytic in being critical of how he's run his business, to a certain extent, sometimes he's made decisions. People who on the stock exchange, to a large extent, he's been very shrewd and he's pushed boundaries where some actually argue that he, you know, may have screwed over some of his passive shareholders. Who knows? But then at the end of the day, it is also hard to judge someone just from business, because in business, to survive, you've got to be aggressive and go there. Does that make him a bad person if he was in public office? Who knows? But the moral of the story, I think, you can never really say. Yeah.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is there's arguments on both sides, but you know, we might want a businessman like Kosana, but we end up with a Chiangwa. You know, we might want
is that a successful businessman? Is Chiangwa a successful businessman?
He's a businessman, but my point is, you know, you might want a Warren Buffett but you end up with a Donald Trump. Is what the point I'm making is that the people who tend towards politics as businessmen, in fact, generally I believe the people who tend towards politics have a certain level of narcissism. And, you know, in business people, narcissism is, you know, and then the narcissism of a politician on top of that means you end up with the people the business people who want to go into politics are your Chianguas and not necessarily your Masiwas or your Nkosana Moyos.
You see, for me, it's, you know, there are no hard and fast rules to these things. Mm-hmm. You can, as you said, end up with a Trump, or you can end up with a Macron. And, you know, I think one aspect of successful business people is, which is not talked about, but you really must have a strong team around you.
Yep.
I don't think there's anything you can do in this world that you achieve by yourself. Yes, you can definitely have the ideas, make the decisions, and a whole bunch, but you have a successful team around you that executes a lot of the ideas that it is you put forward. And with business people, it's the same thing. If you have a businessman who can come in and put in a team that he is going to lead with, I think some of the aspects that you spoke of in terms of social consciousness will come out when you have a public service minister who knows what they're doing and what they're about their business. When you have a minister of health who understands the needs of public health and that sort of aspect. So for me, it's then looking at how does this person, you know, run their business? What sort of person is this? Are they a team player, or are they a, you know, it's all me type thing? I make all the rules. And then you'll then get to see what kind of leadership you get to. And I'll again give the example of Macron and Trump. Trump, I think it was today, I read something about his cabinet meeting yesterday was all about them, you know, heaping praises on him and saying we're grateful for the opportunity, you've blessed us, and all sorts of things. And these are, you know, his secretaries, his ministers are coming to him and
giving him that extra assurance, literally
just almost bowing down.
There
to
was
the
something
guy.
Quite familiar about it as a Zimbabwean. I've seen pictures of Fat Obed on his knees. And I don't know how a man of such his gargantuan proportions managed to get down on his knees.
Wow. But you're right. All those things, you know, Mugabe is an angel, Krimora. This is exactly what was happening to Trump in, I think, more sophisticated words. And then on the other hand, you have Macron.
No, it wasn't. It was the same. Anzi, it's a blessing to serve under you.
So, and then on the other hand, you have French President Macron, who said he's coming in, he's going to have a 50-50 gender-balanced cabinet. And, you know, he appoints people with the capabilities, pretty much like what, what's the Canadian guy's name?
Justin Trudeau.
What Trudeau did, you know. So he's got, you know, proper qualified people who aren't necessarily politicians, for health ministry, energy, and, you know, all these sort of things. So I really don't know. In the field, for our economy, and I generally think it, for our economy, I genuinely think it could be a good idea. But I think this applies regardless of who is, whether you have a politician, a pastor, a teacher, an accountant, you know, a driver as president, whoever's running. What at the end of the day, it's the people you surround yourself with and how you interact with those people that can then lead to a successful
encompassing.
Yeah.
My issue also on my the point I also want to put as a bottom line in terms of Zimbabweans assuming that politicians, I mean successful business people, make for good politicians. The truth of the matter.
But wait, before you even say that, let's actually question these Zimbabweans, because we're assuming something here. Because if these people run, they're not going to win.
No, okay. I'm speaking from a space where, okay, in WhatsApp groups, in social conversations,
okay,
it
fair
comes.
Enough. Yeah.
Okay. I was being as superficial as the Watchman.
As the Watch, the 10% of social media.
Yes. I would say that we also have an over infatuation with that, because, to be honest, some people we do assume as successful business people in Zimbabwe. From a business evaluation point of view, are not necessarily successful business people. You see, what happens in Zim, and I won't mention names, is there's some people who we assume were successful business people, but when they were during their time as executives or management of certain companies, those companies actually flopped, right? So, but then unfortunately, they get fat paychecks. So what then happens is, to the superficial observer or the one who isn't as erudite in terms of evaluating business, you just look at it as, oh, Chris Chenga left such and such group, right? I was probably running down the company. But then because I go out with a fat chick, to the public perception will be he was wildly successful because materially he looks good. So my point is, we should also be wary of how we evaluate successful business people.
On that point, there's also something we should evaluate, is whether somebody is a businessman in the sense that they own a business and, you know, like strive.
An entrepreneur or an employee.
Or an employee, because you have certain people, and Nkosana was CEO of Standard Chartered.
Sorry, disatenda kure, erudite means having and showing great knowledge to our listeners on one movie. So
But anyway, yeah, so you have Ngosana who is CEO of Stanchart, I believe. And, you know, he worked for the World Bank, he worked for AFDB as well. But I don't believe he actually, well, I don't know, I stand corrected on this one. But I don't, you know, I don't think he had a business even that compares to Econet. If he did, we'd know about it. So there's also that aspect as well when you're thinking about it, is you see somebody who is a CEO, but he doesn't actually own the business. You know, he's an employee at the end of the day. So that's just another aspect. I don't know if you have anything else to add, Henry.
Not on that. I think that, you know, what the actual, the main natural you know, limitation to all of these people and all of these candidates is that at the end of the day, you know, the one drawback that they will all have is a lack of political legitimacy. And that's actually the most important thing,
mm-hmm.
is their skills and everything else aside, is that to get everything, to get anything done, particularly in a parliamentary democracy or constitutional democracy like ours, where you are eventually going to have to consensus build if the system is working well. Without political legitimacy, you can get very little done, even on an international scale. So, you know, one has to always consider, can they parlay their business acumen or their business credentials into that legitimacy? And, you know, you can have, and that argument can go either way. You can have a look at someone like Strive and say, internationally, he's very well recognized and well respected, so maybe on the international stage he certainly won't, but would he be able to command a room of cabinet ministers or of war veterans or of army generals? I don't know. And that's probably the biggest drawback, and for someone who wants to do something in the country, is that lack of political legitimacy. So at the end of the day, vote wisely. Vote for people with political legitimacy.
Look at you putting out your own advice and warnings. Watchmen Part 2.
I'm not a watchman.
Anyway,
I'm the watcher.
I think yeah, no, that's a very good aspect to put about it, is that, you know, at the end of the day, it is politics. And, you know, are you able to play the politics? If yes, then, you know, that adds to it. If no, then you're going to fall by the wayside. Our time has come to a good point to end the show, I think, maybe. We can have the discussion. I think it'll be interesting to hear what people say. So if you are on Twitter, hit us up. My Twitter handle.
Maybe we should release a. You should release a. A poll before the episode goes out, maybe in the next day, and then people can listen to the episode and see how the poll compares.
That'll be dope, actually. So you can check me out on Twitter at Chris Charamba, Chris Charamba on Instagram, Facebook, everywhere you can find me. Definitely we'll have this discussion with more people. We'll have this discussion in the group as well. Henry mentioned the WhatsApp group. Check it out, our Facebook page at Politics and Beyond, Beyond Poly ZW. We'll also ask the question there and see what people say. Chris, thank you for being here. Where can people find you online?
On Twitter at Chris Chenga. My Facebook is private, so please don't bother.
And do you have anything else you want to plug? Any shows? Any of your columns, anything that you want people to be aware of?
The only thing I'd like to plug is I really like Politics and Beyond, especially not just the show itself, but the platforms in which you offer engagement, such as your WhatsApp group, which I encourage your listeners to get on there, because the conversation is quite stimulating. However, it's contained within good quality and in good demeanor.
We've actually had some interesting things happen in the WhatsApp group of late. Yes.
This guy's a zero, that Chepaka attacker.
To everyone, you get on this WhatsApp group. It's a good platform, and we do post up the episodes there for download, so you can send them to your grandmothers and Dotito and everything, because that's where we need to be listened to. And thanks for listening. I'm Henry Beattie, and this is Capital 26 Free. Free to say it.
Free to do it.
And now. Capital 26 Free.